Now stay tuned for Straight Talk, the show where social justice meets criminal law. Brought to you on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Now here's your host, Andre Hayes.
Good morning, Charlottesville. You are listening to Straight Talk on WPBC-FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Straight Talk is a series of interviews and conversations about legal and social justice issues affecting our community. I am your host, Andre Hakes. On today's show, we'll be talking with Amy Laufer, who is chair of the Charlottesville City School Board and also founder and chair of Women Leaders of Virginia. Welcome, Amy.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for being here today. It's I've known you for a little while, but I didn't know that you did all this great stuff in the community. I just thought you knew how to dance.
Well, thank you. And I can say that you know how to dance.
Amy and I met in a Zumba class over at ACAC, where I note that Amy was particularly goofy, thus sparking my inner goofiness.
Yeah, it's a great class. It's a great stress reliever. I love it.
Yeah, it's totally fun. And then I messed up my foot. I need to get back in there again.
I haven't been going either.
Oh, no. Yeah. Now, see, I was just thinking about renewing my membership, but I'm not going if you're not going.
No. I actually go even if I can only go for 15 minutes. I shake it for 15 minutes and run out the door.
Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So, Amy, you know, you've got these titles that I didn't know you had.
Yes.
Tell me first off about those two titles. Tell me what you're doing in those positions.
As chair of the school board, I help, you know, implement programs, meet with a lot of different people to talk about things that are going on in the school. I was elected in 2011 and then again in, I think it was 2015. And then I started Women Leaders of Virginia in 2014 to help Democratic women get elected to state office.
Now, what is Women Leaders of Virginia?
So we're an organization that financially supports Democratic women running for delegate or Senate. And last year we did, within combined from 2014, we've done about $30,000 for about 16 candidates. And five of them won. And we have one right now that just won her primary. And we have another woman that's running for delegate. So we're starting, you know, 2017 is going to be a great year for women again.
So are you, it's a PAC, Political Action Committee.
Right. So I traveled around the state meeting with different groups, talking about different women. You know, last year we actually had the most women ever run. We had about 26 women across the state running for office on a state level, which was really exciting.
I'm going to want to get into that Women Leaders of America hat that you wear.
Yes.
Women Leaders of Virginia, I guess. Is there a larger organization is an umbrella?
Sure. So actually, it's the same business model as Emily's List.
Okay.
So, and as today, actually, right after this interview, I'm going to a board meeting for Women Leaders of Virginia, and we are changing our name to Virginia's List.
Virginia's List. Oh,
yes,
nice.
Right?
I mean,
we're piggybacking on that we are in Virginia, and we are going to be definitely becoming a mini Emily's List. And actually, right before the election, Ellen Malcolm, the founder of Emily's List, came to my house to launch, you know, people going to help Hillary's election. Her campaign. So anyway, it was a real honor, and it's really exciting to be
Is Virginia's List, as I suspect it will soon come to be known, is that a subgroup of a national group of this Emily's List group, or is it a separate independent organization that just sort of parallels?
You know, it's separate, but they do consider, North Carolina has Lillian's List.
Mm-hmm.
Eleanor's List is in New York.
Mm-hmm.
There's Carolyn's List, I think, is in Wyoming. So there's lots of these mini Emily's List.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a real affiliation with Emily's List, but they do hold conferences so that all of us can get together and talk about strategy, et cetera.
Got it.
So that is the plan, is to be
folded
into
this. There's no formal structural relationship among the organizations.
Right.
But they work with each other all the time.
Right, because we have the same purpose.
That makes sense. And that's probably the thing, you know, that work, that sort of, you know, women in office kind of work that you're doing is of great interest to me. But before I go there, I want to talk a little bit about school board stuff.
Sure.
So you were giving me some crib notes on this interview before we got started, and you mentioned a number of acronyms that I don't know what they mean, like STEM and AVID,
right?
And something called Link Crew.
Right.
What? Talk to me.
Great.
Tell me what's going on.
These are really great programs that we've implemented within the past, I'd say, 5 years. Some as early as this past year, but STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. And sometimes we call it STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, art, and math. But we had a major capital improvement plan about 3 years ago where we renovated our middle school science lab and our high school science lab to offer 3D printing and manufacturing and engineering type courses. So,
super.
Yes, it's a really exciting program. Actually, we had the Board of Education from the federal government come to visit us to look at our program. So it's amazing opportunity for kids. Actually, in the summer, they can do internships and talk with professors from like Stanford and Harvard and MIT. I mean, it's really an incredible opportunity for a public education to offer.
In the summer, you're talking about kids can go to summer school in the Charlottesville City public schools and talk to professors from Harvard?
Stanford, MIT.
How's that?
I know. It's because of our 3D printing and our manufacturing and engineering kind of focus that's come to a national recognition. Actually, we've been in partnership with the Smithsonian creating different curriculum packages and kits mm-hmm. for other school divisions.
So, oh, wow.
I know. It's an amazing opportunity for public education.
How does that interaction happen? I mean, do those professors come to Charlottesville?
Yes, or they can use, you know, we do Skype,
mm-hmm.
you know, these kind of...
And so you literally mean the kids are talking to
yes,
those. Wow.
Literally. Yeah, it's really exciting.
Well, that STEM acronym, I've been doing a little Christmas shopping for my son this month because I am that much of a procrastinator that I didn't have all this bought in June.
I was just on Amazon yesterday.
and I saw STEM on a lot of things I'm looking at, and I have come to understand that that means science and technology.
Right.
So it's engineering and math. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a national shift in conversation and for education right now.
Do you feel like this is sort of a reaction that we're having to some of the news reports we've heard of students in other countries sort of kicking our butts in math and the sciences?
Yeah, and I think it's also a reaction to the industry and where we're going in terms of automation for manufacturing and things of that nature and coding. Mm-hmm. You know, we really know that that is the future of most of our kids in terms of employment. So I think it's a reaction to all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk to me about AVID.
So AVID.
What's AVID?
AVID is our program that we have implemented actually starting in fifth grade. It's an organizational tool to help kids organize, you know how we have to organize ourselves in terms of our meetings and, you know, projects that we have coming due.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this isn't something natural. So we teach it in a real formal way. And then as the students progress into higher grades, it's really talking about going to college and post-secondary school or, you know, if you're going to be going into the workforce.
Sort of a time management tool for the
right.
kids?
And helping them plan their future. You know, it's about thinking about beyond the high school. What do you want to do with your life? And in the high school, they actually starting in fifth grade, they also tour colleges, you know, lots of that kind of discussion. But then in high school, they're actually helping them fill out the college applications and the student aid type forms.
So it's sort of a college counseling program that
right.
starts really, really little.
Yeah, and it's really intentionally focused to help, like, first-generation college students.
What's the acronym stand for?
You know, that's
Don't
a good
know.
Question.
That's okay.
I can't remember. It's through achievement via... you know, I can't remember. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Got
it's
it.
One of those things that's been in place for a while.
And then you mentioned Link Crew.
Sure. This is a great program that the students actually suggested.
Mm-hmm.
So their idea was that students need mentoring. So if you're a child, you know, maybe your parents had never taken an AP course or no one's ever really talked to you about it. And you're interested in it, but you're scared, right? Because you don't see a lot of your friends there. So the 11th and 12th graders are mentoring our 9th and 10th grade students to show them, you know, hey, I'm taking an AP class, I'm taking an honors class, or, you know, I'm volunteering with this organization after school, really trying to cultivate, you know, relationships and helping students, you know, go to their best potential.
Is this something that is all of the students in a particular grade are participating in, or how does that work?
No, actually, it's students that have decided that they would like to be mentors. It's not mandatory, of course. You know, it's African-American students primarily helping their, you know.
Their peers.
Right.
Their younger peers.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really great because instead of an adult saying, hey, you could take that class, you'd be really good at that. Instead, it's someone your own age saying, hey, I'm doing this, you can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really excited about this. Just started this year.
Gotcha. And is it just African-American students or is it?
It's primarily, but it's we're really trying to focus on kids that could be successful in an honors AP setting, but, you know, just don't feel like they are capable. But we know they are.
Right.
You know, they just need a little push from
encouragement.
There. Right. Yeah.
Right. I gotcha. Because they don't have the family history or background or
right.
Mama isn't. Mama didn't.
Yeah. Actually, I can use my own example. I grew up, you know, in the middle of nowhere, really in Wisconsin on a dairy farm, and my parents didn't go to college. And when I think of this program, I think of the times that I was in school. We had two AP classes and not a lot of my friends were taking those classes. And I know that I was told, oh, you don't need to do that anyway. You know, the truth is you don't need to go to college. You probably won't even go to college. You're going to, you know, you'll stay here.
You're going to have babies and be barefoot in the kitchen? Is that what's going
to
happen?
I don't think they wanted to say that. And
but that's
I don't
what
think
they meant.
Well, I think they just meant, you know, yeah, probably.
Or you're not smart enough.
Right. Or... And it really took a lot of, you know, I just had to go say, I'm going to take this class anyway. And, you know, I also think of when I was in college and that's when computers first started coming out. And there was actually two computer labs and I was terrified to go into them because in my high school, we had only two computers and we all sat around them and watched each other type. So, I mean, it definitely, I myself found, you know, someone my age to sit down with me in those computer labs because I was too terrified to sit there and I would not go unless they were there.
Wow. I remember the computer labs at UVA, and we had a DOS environment is what we had.
Right.
Those little green screens.
Yes.
And we didn't have anything like that in my school. I grew up in Southwest Virginia.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we still had dittos. I mean,
right.
We had a lot of dittos. You know, we just, I think the worst grade I ever got in high school was in typing class.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, my mother said to me, you know, you have got to learn to type because then you'll never be without a job. You know, if you can type fast, you, no matter what else happens in the world, you're going to be able to have a job. And
actually, my mom told me the same thing.
Did she?
At least you could be a secretary.
That's right. At least you can type some important man's documents for him.
Of course.
But, you know, that's a valid perspective. At the time, you know, it was kind of like, well, you know, worst case scenario, you have work.
I know. Actually, I took it very seriously. Actually, that was my best grade.
That was your best grade? I was terrible at it.
I ended up getting to, like, I think 80 words per minute.
Oh, man, I think I was around 60 somewhere. It was bad, and it was riddled with errors.
Yeah.
Let me just say that, you know, Microsoft Word has turned out to be a very good thing for me.
Yeah.
I can type very fast, but you have to correct the mistakes that I'm making along the way. So.
Well, it's nice not to have to use the whiteout anymore.
Yeah, I remember all that. But when I went to UVA, we had the computer lab, and I remember I wasn't afraid of it, but I do remember being sort of flummoxed. Not really knowing how this worked. But there were students there who were, you know, in charge of the computer lab in shifts, right? It like a work study, right?
Right.
So you could go to that guy and go, how do I turn this on?
Right, exactly. I don't want to touch a key. I might hit
right,
the wrong
you know,
thing.
And you'd get some help.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. So I got it. Well, that seems pretty cool.
I think it's really exciting.
So this is one of those moments when my producer reminds me that I'm supposed to say something like, you're listening to Stray Talk on 94.7 WPVC. My name is Andre Hakes, and I am here with Amy Laufer, who is the chair of the Charlottesville School Board and also the chair of the founder of the Virginia.
Women Leaders of Virginia.
Women Leaders of Virginia. I keep getting confused. We had somebody on from the League of Women Voters recently. And so that's what keeps wanting to come out of my mouth. And I know that's not what you mean. In fact, I have it written down on a piece of paper in front of me, but I can't seem to bring myself to read it.
Well, soon it'll be Virginia's list anyway.
There we go. That'll be easier to remember. I like that. So I have a question for you. I was actually sitting down at breakfast with my in-laws this morning. Who were eating a lovely breakfast that my wife, Catherine, cooked. And I was sucking down a cup of coffee and going, what am I going to ask Amy Laufer this morning? And I was talking to my mother-in-law and asked her about, you know, what kinds of things she would want to know. And she had been a librarian for the school and had taught home ec. And, she was very involved in the public schools. And she asked me, she specifically said, well, I would want to know about incorporating technologies in the school, right? Well, it sounds like we were already talking about that. We've sort of covered that. But then she expanded it for me a little bit, and she said, I would want to know how they're going to teach the teachers. Is anybody teaching the teachers how to use the technologies that they're incorporating?
Yeah, actually, that is the barrier, right? Because I know myself, my 9-year-old can figure out my iPad faster than I can. So, yes, we have a lot. There's a lot of concerted effort to professional development in technology for teachers, you know, because each of our students starting in fifth grade has a one-on-one. Mm-hmm. They have their own Chromebook, you know, and starting in seventh and eighth grade, they can start taking those home.
Well, who makes sure that Mrs. Smith or Mrs. Jones knows how to teach the kids how to use the Chromebook?
Yeah, so we have professional development employees, staff. We have actually coaches in each of the schools that focus on not just technology, but best teaching practices. And we also we've had a Google summit, I think every year for the past 3 or 4 years, focusing on all of the Google technology that we use in our schools for the teachers.
Like what?
You know, Google Docs. So we're moving away from the Microsoft type products and moving into the Google platform where the kids each get their own Gmail account and they can communicate with their teachers on that format. So it's actually really exciting to see my daughter, who's in seventh grade, you know, utilizing not just Google Docs, but their PowerPoint presentation. You know, it's really, so those are the kind of things that we're focusing on.
Gotcha.
Using the Google platform.
And you have these training programs in place to make sure that the teachers know how to teach.
Yeah, and how to use the technology. Actually, and it's kind of expected that most of the curriculum is online, that they can communicate with the parents and the kids, you know, in that platform.
Mm-hmm. So, gotcha. Well, I think this is one of those moments where we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be right back with Straight Talk. You are listening to Straight Talk on WPVC-FM, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. My guest today is Amy Laufer, and she is the chair of the Charlottesville School Board, and she is also the chair and founder of Women Leaders of Virginia, which is about to be Virginia's list, very shortly in the vein of Emily's list. And we are talking this morning, we've been talking about education issues related to the school board. I have a thought for you. What do you think, as an educator, as a member of the school board, how do you feel about Betsy DeVos's appointment as education secretary by the Trump administration? Do you know anything about her, or is that so, you know, national and you're so local that it's not something you...
Well, I can say that the school board, you know, we do advocacy at the state and federal level, and the majority of our board members are going to be advocating on the federal level this year because we think it's critical that they hear our voices. You know, from what I've heard about her, you know, she's definitely into vouchers. She believes in school choice and diverting public funds for private institutions. You know, she's, by the way, she does not have a degree in education. She herself did not attend public school. Her children did not attend public school. So I, you know, of course, I'll be trying to stay optimistic, but I think this is the situation with the federal government and the funds they grant to schools. They're primarily for special ed students and students on free and reduced lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very targeted programs to support these students.
Mm-hmm.
And so those would be the monies that she would be diverting to private institutions.
In other words, students who are special ed students, students who have learning disabilities or need right. particular assistance in order to succeed in schools, and kids who don't get enough to eat at home.
Right.
That's what we're talking about here.
Exactly. Those are the monies we do a lot of remediation and parent outreach with those funds and special education, of course, physical therapy, occupational therapy, all speech therapy, all of these services are through federal funds. Of course, local funds also are matched, and we support students with our local funds, but that's the money that we're talking about.
Do you think that, so tell me a little bit about what the role of the education secretary is. Is her role basically going to be deciding what happens to the funding, or is she going to have other more far-reaching impacts into the curriculum?
They just changed. We went from No Child Left Behind, which was, all these mandated tests, to Every Child Succeeds Act, which basically gives the states a little bit more leeway in mm-hmm. terms of the testing and accountability. So that's been kind of the role of what the previous secretaries of education have done. I think it'll be really interesting to see who is in her staff mm-hmm. and what kind of priorities they have, and really how Congress is going to be, reacting to someone like that, and possibly, creating bills that would allow for public funds to be funneled into private institutions. So basically what we're saying is, give a voucher to a student and now they can go to some private school, but when that happens, that student has to provide their own transportation. They have to have their own food, their own lunches, mm-hmm. all of the things that public institutions provide. Mm-hmm. So the students that could actually do that are probably our students that, have more
have
access.
Resources.
Exactly.
The students whose families have some money would be able to do that, and
right.
the ones who don't would not, and then what would happen is the public schools would sort of decline further. I wonder, I'm thinking of it now sort of like an insurance pool, right? We've been hearing a lot about health insurance in the,
right.
In the last 8 years, right? And I'm thinking about, the way that you secure decent insurance for everyone is by requiring everyone to be in the pool, right?
Right.
And we already don't do that in the public schools, right? You can opt
right.
out. You can
right.
choose to go to private school. But at least the public funding that's there benefits everyone in the pool.
Right, exactly.
And if we start taking that public money and giving it to people who need it the least, because if
right.
you got it, it wouldn't be enough for you to, if you didn't have any money and you were poor, I guess you would have this voucher that says you can go to a private school, but you wouldn't be able to do it because you wouldn't have a bus and you wouldn't have school lunch and you wouldn't have
right,
all these other
right.
things. Is that sort of what we're saying? And,
yes.
And so those people are going to end up staying in the public schools, which are going to have less funding.
Exactly.
Thus creating a more of an underclass.
Yeah, more disparity. Actually, Louisiana has gone through this model. Actually, so has Florida to some extent. Some of these states have already started implementing things like this. And the jury's still out on how effective this is.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, when you look at a charter school, they do not have the same requirements as a public school. So they don't have to, quote unquote, pass tests and, make mm-hmm. sure their graduation rate is X.
Mm-hmm.
But they do pull from public funds.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we know that a third of them are very successful. A third of them are no better than the public school. And mm-hmm. the other third are not more successful. So this model, it's just not proven to be effective.
Are those schools always, schools that those vouchers might be used at, are they always nonprofit or are they for-profit sometimes? Are we going to end up with sort of Trump pre-K?
This is the question. It's really, that's the question. She's lobbied hard in, I think it's Michigan, to do these kind of programs. Actually, she holds a sign that says, my job is to dismantle public education. I've seen a picture
Are
like
you
that.
Serious?
Yes.
Actually, my job my is Facebook. To dismantle public education. That's our education secretary.
That's one of the pictures I've seen.
Her, literally.
Yes.
Wow, okay. And was that like a reputable news source, or was that one of these somebody photoshopped something on?
Maybe I better check it out. Might not
be true. Just because you saw a picture of it these days doesn't mean it actually happened.
You're so right.
Right. About the only thing I think that, you know, one of the problems we've got with the news right now is that you have to, you almost have to hear a person's voice say something.
Right.
In order to know that that's real.
Yeah. Or actually, I don't even think that's enough. I think you need to know where the news source came from.
Well, you do need to know where the news source came from. But I guess what I'm saying is if you have an interview with a candidate and you can hear that it is that person's voice and you can hear the words they're saying, you have a sort of a primary source, right?
Yes.
Now, if that interview comes from something really sketchy and the quality of the interview isn't very good, that could be altered, but, you know.
It's a question mark. But I know her job in Michigan was to help promote vouchers to, you know, basically take public funds to private institutions.
Well, let me just mess with your premise for a second on that, just in the interest of, you know, being devil's advocate, right?
Sure.
Why wouldn't it be good if you were a poor family? Why wouldn't it be good to pull your kid out of the allegedly failing public school system and put them in a private school somewhere because you couldn't take advantage of the busing and the lunches? I understand that. But, you know, what if you drop your kid off on the way to work? What if you live in the city and they can take the city bus and you know, they're old enough to do that? I mean, are there other reasons why that would not be good? Or?
Yeah, it's an interesting argument because I actually have my master's in education at from Columbia University Teachers College, and a lot of my classmates started charter schools in New York City. So I personally, I think there is room possibly for charter schools. I know Virginia in particular is not favorable. I think we have maybe three in the whole state, whereas when you look at other states, there are many, many more. But I also think that a lot of our public schools are really good. And I think that's why we don't see the influx of charter and for-profit schools. But I agree with some of your argument. If I was living in an area where I know my child was not getting the best education and I could put my name into a lottery and be able to be moved to a school that, you know, as I said, a third are more effective, a third are just as effective, and a third are less effective. If I knew that I was putting my child into the third effective column, more effective column, I would, you know, I would definitely put myself into that lottery. I think, you know, the way education is really moving right now is having more targeted programs and making it more individualized to students' needs. You know, the STEM program is a perfect example of that. And our dual enrollment type programs are the same way.
I've heard a lot about magnet schools.
Yeah, that would be the same thing. So what you're trying to do is create a curriculum and an environment that's really specific to an industry and students that are interested in that. You know, so it's becoming more individualized. And honestly, with the use of technology, I also believe that we're becoming more individualized. I mean, if you look at like Khan Academy and even our Reflex Math, a lot of these online programs that allow students to work at their own pace, at their level, really evens out the playing field. I mean, because then you can have, and we've always had this, we've always had groups of students that were each at different levels. You know, so, okay, they're all in third grade, but the truth of the matter is maybe a third of them are reading on a kindergarten level, a third are reading on a first grade, and a third are reading on fifth grade or something, you know. And with technology, we're really able to focus in on individual needs. And the nice thing about all of that is it comes with its own tracking system. So the teachers, you know, can really, it's much easier to see the tracking report, you know, and basically go to that student and be like, I see that you're missing this piece. Let's work on this, you know, and really individualize. And I think education is going that way anyway. But when you look at, say, the South Side, it's much more difficult, right? Because those students, they're, you know, they might not have the same resources, say, as in Charlottesville. So anyway, this it's all lots of things to talk about.
So I sort of want to switch gears a little bit right now. And I want to talk a little more about your hat as Virginia's List.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. How did you end up starting this organization? what prompted you to do that?
So I think it was my third year on the school board. I was accepted into the Sorensen Institute, which is a political leaders program at UVA. And that we actually traveled the state for about a year looking at different you know, issues in different parts of, you know, like we went to a coal mine down in Southside. It was really opened my eyes to what's going on across the state. And then it just so happened at about the same time, I was accepted into Emerge Virginia, which is actually training, political training for Democratic women running for office. So at the same time I was being exposed to state issues, I took a training in Emerge where everybody in the class was running for office. And I met a dozen women running for state office. And honestly, I thought two things. That first of all, like, how did I not know about this? Like, I feel like I'm kind of plugged in. I didn't realize there are so many women running. And then second, I thought, well, I want to help them. Like, I know when I go lobby in Richmond, you know, there's very few women there. You know, I hate saying this, but the truth is that most of the women are either the secretaries or the receptionists, you know, and or the, you know, assistants. So I knew from going to Richmond how few women there were. And so then I started doing a little more research. And sure, I was not wrong. We were 43rd in the nation in terms of women elected.
Virginia is 43rd
we
in
were,
the nation.
We were, but remember when I told you we supported women and five of them got in? Three were new, so now we're 39th.
Wow, okay. We went up in the rankings.
Sure. So when I first started, we were at 17% women elected to state office, and now we're at 19%.
It's still pretty bad. I mean, Virginia's the South, but it's not the Deep South, and we ought to be doing better than that.
Yeah, I agree, especially when I know, you know, we comprise about 51% of the population. You would assume that we would have a little bit better representation. So,
do you know what the percentage is? I mean, you've given me sort of a state
19.
Ranking.
19. Yeah, 19. We have 19%.
19% of our state legislators are female.
Yes, and of that, 17% are Democratic women.
Okay. Not a lot of Republican women in this state.
That you surmise that well, yes.
Yes, okay. Well, cool. Yes. So that's why that's how you sort of got into it.
Yes, so then, you know, I just decided, actually, this is what happened. I wanted to have an event for all of these women to be able to speak to the people I knew in Charlottesville. And then it came to me that the only way to actually distribute the funds was to create a PAC. And it went against everyone's recommendation. Everyone told me, don't do it. It's going to be a lot of work. Well, they were right. It is a lot of work. But but it really, it's really satisfying. It's work that needs to be done. And you know, that first event was so powerful. You know, we called it Theodora Talks from TEDx. So we gave each candidate like 1 or 2 minutes to speak and talk about their district and what they wanted to do. And everybody loved it. And I felt as much energy as everyone else. And I, you know, out of that first event, I ended up getting a bunch of volunteers that helped set up Facebook for me and, you know, became the board eventually of the PAC. So,
Now, when you say people said don't do it, it's going to be a lot of work. Do you mean they said don't do, you know, the any organizing in this end? Or do you mean they said don't become a PAC?
Don't become a PAC.
So why is it a lot of work to be a PAC?
Well, you know, you have to file your financial forms with the state. And to remain relevant, you really need to be driving across the state, identifying candidates, supporting them, identifying people in those communities that will be your voice in that area. So that was a lot of work, you know, and then also like keeping up with the newsletter. I could go on and the, you know, then the accounting of it all.
Does the PAC have certain federal reporting forms? I mean, what do you do in terms of your accounting of funds and your taxes? And
right. Actually, so because we only support state office, we are not a federal PAC and it makes the filing much simpler. And it's basically 4 times a year. Except for during elections, we have to report how many donations we've given, how much we've given out, what we spent, you know, I've made postcards or something, you know. So that's pretty much it in terms of reporting.
And is it is the PAC, is the income of the PAC taxed, or you're a nonprofit?
No. So actually, it's not a nonprofit, and it's not a for-profit. It's just a political action committee.
It's its own entity.
Exactly.
It doesn't fall into either category.
Precisely. So it makes it a bit easier that way. But, you know, it's...
Is a PAC a creature of statute? Or, I mean, how does that happen? How can you be...
You register with the state Board of Elections. Actually, if you go on their website, they have a drop-down menu for PACs. And, you know, actually, when you run a campaign yourself, as I did for school board, mm-hmm. you also start an account similar. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just that this time I'm fundraising for other people.
For other people, right.
Right. And to be able to give out the funds, you have to be registered as a PAC. So
why? I can give money to a candidate if
right.
I want to.
Except for what I'm providing is that I'm telling you who the slate are. You know, you would be expecting then everyone to know who's running across the state. So in my mind, I'm providing value to show who is around the state, who is competitive.
Yeah, I just meant, why do you have to be a PAC in order to give the money, right? I mean, I could give money as a...
I wanted to give to multiple candidates, and I didn't want to do it through just myself.
Right.
And I also think, you know, Emily's List is the same way, right?
We're stronger. There's got to be some advantage to it.
There's, yeah, because we can pool money from across the state. So if I have somebody down in Southside that's very mm-hmm. interested in women getting elected, but they don't have a candidate,
mm-hmm.
they can support our organization, and we can use their funds to help people.
To help in a place where you might actually have a woman candidate who
right.
might actually get elected.
Yes.
Which might someday lead to having a woman candidate in Southside. And
exactly. Right.
I got you. No, that makes sense. So this is that moment where we take a brief break, and we'll be right back with Straight Talk. Hey, welcome back to Straight Talk. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC. I'm Audrey Hakes, and my guest today is Amy Laufer, who is chair of the school board and chair and founder of Women Leaders of Virginia, soon to be known as Virginia's List. We were just talking about sort of what you do and how you got started with the Women Leaders of Virginia, and we were talking about what a PAC is. I wanted to sort of touch with you for a moment on some, you know, the election of Trump has a lot of women riled up. There's about to be a march on Washington. And I understand there are buses from Charlottesville. I mean, some of our local leaders have secured funds to transport lots of people to D.C. for this march. But we got no march permit. Tell me a little bit about, you know, what you know about the march and your involvement.
So I've been working with a group of women to organize transportation to D.C. and also a rally that could happen in Charlottesville as well. But the permits, in terms of that, I know what I've read is that the inauguration takes, you know, priority. And because the Trump administration has not actually registered for these, you know, permits, we're still waiting to get our permits.
So the reason that we're waiting is not because there are so many inauguration permits granted that there's no space left, but that the incoming administration has not yet gotten around to saying, here's where we want to have our events.
Right, exactly. That's according to what I read in the Washington Post.
Interesting.
Right.
Well, how, you know, this whole march thing came about very suddenly. I think we were all taken by surprise that Trump was elected. We all sort of listened to Rachel Maddow. And
I think surprise is an understatement.
you know, everybody, all the other pundits in the country and thought, well, right. you know, we got this sewn up. We're going to have our first woman president. And then suddenly we didn't. And my understanding was that the march sort of happened because immediately, you know, a bunch of women said, wait a minute.
Right.
You know, we want to do this. But they sort of jumped into it without maybe having all the organizational ability in place that they needed.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I think it's, you know, it's really purely reactionary. And I fully support it, though.
Yeah, well,
I've got
my Doc Martens on today. Yeah. My wife bought me a lovely new pair of Doc Martens, and I'm breaking them in so they won't be brand new on January 21st.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think it is ad hoc, but I don't think it's any less relevant because of that. I think it's really necessary that we show our support for each other and that, you know, we will not be silenced during this administration. If the need arises, we will stand up and speak.
What do you suppose will happen if we don't get a permit?
Well, we were just talking
about
this.
Are we going to have a riot in D.C.? What's going to happen?
I don't know. You know, it's really, we were talking about in terms of the buses, you know, without the permit, you can't really park anywhere. You know, you need to find space for that. So I don't know. I hope not.
I'm curious about how the whole permit thing works. I mean, nothing prevents me as a citizen from deciding to make a poster and go stand on the sidewalk, right?
Right, nothing except for when you bring millions of people.
Right, but what, you know, what is it that makes you have to have a permit for that? Each of those millions of people has the right to make a sign and march down the sidewalk.
If they could stay on the sidewalk.
Right.
I mean, I know I've gone to D.C. to rally during college, and we needed permits because we were, you know, basically...
You're blocking traffic.
Right,
or,
and, you know, right. They want to make sure that they have a space for you to be. And I think that that's primarily the issue. And Angela Lynn is actually one of the members of the community that's organizing the trip, and she's done disaster preparedness, and that's basically what the permit allows people to know how many, you know... not protesters, but how many people will be there. Mm-hmm. So then they can adequately, you know, inform the police, rescue
squads. They need
porta-johns,
they need
yes,
safety.
Exactly.
They
like
need,
they can plan for all
sure,
of that.
Sure, keep everybody safe and,
right,
and
exactly.
reasonably well organized. Well, that makes sense. But if you don't give this group of women a permit and they just come anyway.
That's the question.
Are they, you know, can you arrest them anyway? For being there? I mean, I don't think so, but you might be able to arrest them if they go off the sidewalk.
Right. I know. it'll be a real mess. I really can't imagine that we're not going to get the permit at this point. I mean, when you think of all the people that are you're talking about, it's, you know.
Well, I didn't imagine we'd have a white supremacist in the presidential cabinet. So there are a lot of things I haven't been able to imagine that suddenly are becoming imaginable.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be a real question. I hope that they get it sorted.
I do too. And actually, you know, if I can be honest with you, like if this isn't allowed to occur, this is a real red flag for this administration. You know, this is what America is, right?
Right.
We can gather and have free speech,
peaceful protest.
Right. This
redress
is,
of grievances.
Right. This is America. That is what it's based on. So.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real red flag if this isn't.
I wonder, though, if it would have been smarter, perhaps, to have waited and picked a date when you could get a permit, when you could do this in an organized way. I mean, but at the same time, you know, that makes it look more like outside agitators, whereas this is very grassroots. I mean, somebody
you know, I
said, I'm not doing this and just.
Well, I was concerned about the date. I felt like it was too close to inauguration. You know, when we first started talking about this, I did imagine that the next week would have been better. But
I wonder if it's possible to shift it at this point. And the people who are nationally organizing this thing, we have this problem now, right? Because everybody
yes,
has made plans to go. There are bus contracts. There
right.
are right. But by
lots
the same token, you know, is it
flying.
Better to have this and have chaos? On the 21st, or would it be better to, you know, change the date, deal with all the fallout from that, and have a march on it when you can have a proper organization? You don't want people to get hurt.
No, I totally agree. Safety would be first, but I can't imagine if we're not able to go on the date that we had chosen.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It would be a real... issue for me. I mean, if we don't get a permit for the march and the 21st comes around, am I going to get on the bus?
I know.
Right?
That's the question.
You know.
It's like, would you get on a bus that you know has no permission to park anywhere?
Well, I don't think it matters if it can park. It can drive right back out of the city, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah, this
you
is
know,
true.
Drop us off and go, right? You can come back at 5, right? But
yeah, if you can
the issue there. Would be, you know, how likely is it we're going to get arrested? That's the issue, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Well, I don't know if they'd have enough jail space.
I don't think they would. But, you know, that won't be much comfort to the first, you know, however many thousand they do have jail space.
Exactly.
And it won't help our cause any if there's a riot. It won't help our cause any if there's property damage and chaos.
But I think it'll be a real red flag to the administration if we don't. I mean, you know, that is a real signal to America.
Well, it means we need to go all the more. If they don't give you a permit, then there's more reason you need to go. But I don't know. I hope there's somebody with a higher pay grade than me making this kind of determination because.
I know.
It sure needs to happen, and I'm not sure how it's going to happen. Well, and then there's the question of, you know, things are moving so quickly right now, right? This administration, the news cycle, it seems like every day there's some fresh outrage for the left. I hear, you know, and I go, gee, did that really happen? And then I really have to question if it really happened because, you know, like Betsy DeVos's sign, right? You know, you see this stuff and you think, oh, well, you know, of course that happened. You know, here it is in the news, right? But just because it's in the news
doesn't mean it's true.
Doesn't mean it's true. I had a conversation yesterday with a professional woman who I respect very much, who we're chatting along, and she asked me how I felt about Trump. And, you know, obviously we don't know each other that well, because I had to say that I was not all that keen on Trump, right? And she's a Trump supporter. And we started having a very civilized conversation about that. She asked me what I thought about what he'd done so far. And I said, well, you know what? I bet we have different views of what he's done so far. I'll bet we have different facts. I'll bet we have different information. And we started comparing notes on, you know, what news stories we had read. And we absolutely had different facts. The universe in which she's getting her news and living her life and making her decisions is wildly different from the universe in which I'm getting my news and making my decisions. Right. And we both taught each other something.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what you do about that.
I know. I don't either. I was telling you before, my own family, you know, we sat down to watch what I assume everyone is watching is like the NBC nightly news. And I grew up watching it. I still watch it. My kids watch it. And my brother, who I haven't seen in, you know, a year, sat down and said, I haven't seen this kind of news in many years. I never watched this station. And it really did bring home to me how different our lives are, and how, you know, we kind of go with our own biases. I really think it's important that the Democratic Party, we really need to start listening to other viewpoints. You know, as much as I want to say that we have it all figured out, we don't. You know, we thought they were imploding, mm-hmm. and we actually imploded. You know, that's kind of what happened here. So, you know, I really, and actually you just look at the amount of governorships, the amount of state offices we've lost in the past 8 years, and we're really down in terms of Democratic numbers. So, you know, I think it's our leadership really has to come, and we ourselves have to be talking like you did with your coworker about, you know, hearing, really listening. I think that's the thing. And I can say I'm guilty of it too. I listen, quote unquote, but mm-hmm. we really do need to sit and listen and find out, you know, what really resonated with them. I mean, we were hearing words that were terrifying. They were hearing the same words and they weren't terrifying to them.
I don't think they were hearing the same words. That's the problem. I think that some of the, I mean, I'm not saying some of the quotes didn't get, you know, some of the major quotes like grab a bite, you know, I mean, sure that got heard on the other side because it was such a huge story. But just the, like, we had a conversation, this colleague and I, about the Boeing thing. Just to pick a real small, tiny little tidbit of news, right? There was this Trump tweet about Boeing that tanked Boeing's stock for, you know, a little while one day and came back up. But and her version of this news story was that Trump, getting ready for the incoming administration, was looking at a number of things. And one of the things that came across his desk was this order for a new Air Force One, and that this plane was going to cost $40 billion. And, you know, he was like, nope, nothing. No airplane ought to cost. Are you kidding me? $40 billion, you know. And he sent this tweet out that was just, you know, meant to be, we're not going to put up with this fleecing of the taxpayer anymore. We have had enough of this. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys better get real. And what a good thing it was that he was doing that, right? And I said, you know, that's not the news story I heard. And she said, well, what news story did you hear? And I said, well, what I heard was about, you know, 10 minutes before that tweet went out, Boeing CEO had tweeted something about free trade, which could be viewed as critical of Trump's intended policies, and that this tweet was a flexing of the muscle, a retribution, an intimidation of Boeing CEO. Watch this. I'm going to mess with you. And she was very surprised by that, you know, view of things. And so we are just really not hearing the same things.
The same message.
At all.
Right. or the full story on both sides.
That's right.
You know, it is like a full story when you see both.
Well, and how do you know? You know, how do we know what the intent of the tweet was? Right. All we can do is look at the circumstantial evidence.
Well, that's why tweeting is like a terrible way to communicate. I'm sorry, but it doesn't really fully, you know, yeah.
It is a scary thing, isn't it, to suddenly find that, you know, you send out 140 characters and, you know, stock price tumbles. For a major American corporation. Wow!
Yeah, the frightening thing is to think of a president doing that all the time. You know, in 140 characters, you really cannot express the tone, the intention, any of that. That's why it's so dangerous.
That's right.
I mean, I think we're in for a wild roller coaster ride.
We are definitely in for a wild roller coaster ride. What do you think about the heartbeat law passed in Ohio just recently? There's over the abortion rights debate, you know, the states are always trying to pass something that's gonna block abortion and overcome Roe. And of course, now the folks who are on that side of things are looking at the fact that Trump got elected. They think that he's going to get to appoint a Supreme Court justice or two or three, and they're going to swing this. And so states are, you know, continuing to pass laws that are unconstitutional under the current regime, under the current state of the law. With a view to, in the future, by the time this makes its way to the U.S. Supreme Court, the composition of the court will have changed.
And then we will.
We will pass it. And so when you talk about, you know, major battles getting ready to happen, I mean, this law that was just passed in Ohio basically says you can't have an abortion after 6 weeks. Well, that's a month and a half.
I know.
Women don't necessarily know they're pregnant yet.
Right, I know. Actually, you know, during my time at, at Emerge, we had Senator Warner's campaign chief come and talk to us, and he said, you know, I hated all these abortion laws and all this, and, you know, but it never really affected me until my wife was pregnant and we saw a dot on the sonogram. It was like, and then we needed, all of a sudden that law really made a problem because if we couldn't figure it out within a week, it was going to be illegal for us to do anything. And, you know, he's like, people don't understand. And actually, that's what I really appreciate about Hillary Clinton when she came out and gave those very personal stories of who this really affects. And, you know, and by the way, states have been chipping away at this for years. I mean, our own government with their, you know, the walls needed to be, or the hallways needed to be a certain width.
That got dinked, didn't it, by the court not too long ago.
Well, and then McAuliffe took away all of those restrictions.
Right.
But, you know, states have been doing this, you know, everywhere. So, yeah. It's really it
so
is,
it's that it's that's not a that's good an issue situation. That is going to get ugly in
I
no
agree.
Time. I mean, I remember the, you know, some of the marches dealing with abortion. I mean, I don't remember them, but I remember seeing news coverage of them later.
Right.
I was too young or maybe not existing yet.
Yeah.
And some of that stuff got nasty.
Well, right. You know, the fact that Trump actually said he would absolutely keep marriage equality. But abortion, you know, he's just not sure about that. You know, it really harkens to me the fact that you're not allowing women to make their own choices about their lives.
You can't trust anything that is said. That's the problem, is that it changes. It changes all the time. I don't feel comfortable. You know, Trump says, well, absolutely keep marriage. Do I think I can take that to the bank?
No.
Hell no, that's why I got my Doc Martens on.
But, you know, but I really feel like this constant chipping at women's reproductive rights is just a way to control women and their contribution to society.
Well, you don't need to take that special class. You're just going to be in the kitchen anyway.
Right.
It's not necessary for you to understand calculus.
I know.
Yeah,
it's terrifying.
We definitely have got that going on. So talk to me a little bit about... Now, we've got just a few minutes left in the show, and your organization is helping. Now, see, and you thought this was going to be hard to talk for an hour. Not hard at all.
You're right.
Tell me about the candidates that you are supporting, your PAC is supporting in 2017. Who's coming up? What work are you doing in the 2017?
Right now, we have Jennifer McClellan right outside of Richmond. And
I love her.
Yes. She just won her primary.
Mm-hmm.
She's running for the state Senate seat that McEachin just vacated because he's now in Congress.
Super.
So she'll be
love
her
him too.
Elections. I know, right? Her election is January 10th. Actually, our event.
Her election is January 10th?
Right. It's a special election because of
this January 10th.
Yes. In, what is that? In 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
But that is not, is that a statewide election? No.
No, it's a state Senate. So she's running for state Senate.
So will it be a statewide? People will vote?
No, in her
district. No, because only in her district will they vote. Okay, got it, got it.
So she's one of
our candidates. So I can't go to the polls and vote for Jennifer McClellan. That is a shame.
This is what you should do.
Okay, what should
I do? If you know people that live out in Henrico and Richmond, Chesterfield area, you should be calling them and telling them about Jennifer McClellan.
Hey!
Yes!
Not only Jennifer McClellan, but there is an election.
Go out and vote January 10th.
I imagine a lot of people don't even know it's happening.
I know. Actually, her challenge really is to make sure people come out to the polls. Especially after, you know, maybe because of what happened in November.
Maybe there are a lot of them will come out to the polls because they're upset. Maybe.
Yes, absolutely. And we're looking at, I know we have at least, some of these women haven't announced yet, but we have at least three districts that we think we can be in play. We're very excited about that.
Can you tell me what districts they are?
One is right outside us. You know, it's past. It's
give
by
me a
the
town.
Louisa,
give me
Louisa
a,
area.
Oh, wow! You're gonna run a women candidate out that way.
We have Loudoun, I believe, and Fairfax.
Okay.
So,
but Fairfax, you know,
yeah,
but out toward Louisa, I mean,
we need. You know, actually, one thing I wanted to bring up is that there's so few women running, even on the local level. I mean, when we look at actually candidates for school board, city council, supervisors, we're only at like 20% women candidates. So, you know, building a bench to state office then is very difficult for women. So we need women to run on every level.
Why do you think women don't run? And I know I don't have a lot of time to answer this question.
It's talked about this
should have been an earlier question.
Yeah.
But
you know, well, the number one thing is women really don't feel qualified, which is totally outrageous. You know, there's more women getting PhDs at this point than men practically, you know, and there's more women in college than men. And I think women really need to be asked, and men don't feel that kind of, they don't feel that way. They feel like they are qualified and they should run. And a lot of times women have, you know, family situations where they're taking care of their children, their parents, and so they don't feel like they have the time. And also fundraising is a major barrier.
Well, why aren't men taking care of their families?
Exactly.
Or their
this is exactly, yeah, that's, well, you know, women just feel like they need to do it all. And all at the same time. And, you know, that's not true. they are qualified. They can manage. I mean, Jennifer McClellan, you know, she had a child while, actually she's had two children while elected to the House of Delegates. So you can do it, you know, and you just have to know that, you know, you're going to need help with it and you should accept that help.
So there's family responsibilities that women feel they need to disproportionately bear.
Right. Yes. And then and then they feel the media is, you know, going to be more, you know, more difficult with them.
Well, and isn't that true, though?
Yes. Actually, if you look at Clinton's campaign and even Sarah Palin, who, you know, everyone's much more critical of women when they run. So,
well,
you know,
she can see Alaska while she's, you know, Russia, I'm sorry, while she's doing her dishes.
I
you know, there is that, but.
Good thing she was, wasn't she in the running for a position?
Yeah. Did she not get it? Please tell me we're past that.
I think we might be past that.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Although, so anyway, but we know though when women run, they are just as successful as men. And we know when women actually do get elected that they really focus on issues of health care, equal pay and childcare. They kind of work on issues that affect
are important to women.
Right, exactly. So definitely, and we know they'll just work hard on the economy as well. So,
well, the one thing that you said that I want to highlight before we leave is the idea that women need to be asked to run. Is your PAC asking women to run?
Yes.
Are you trying to identify people and say, hey?
Along with Emerge Virginia. Yes.
Emerge. Okay.
And I would just challenge anybody listening. You know a woman that's really passionate about an issue. You think they're smart. You go ask them to run. That's what we all need to start doing.
Gotcha.
So.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Amy. I really appreciate your coming on and talking to
thank
us
you.
About these things. Been great having you.
You're right. That hour went pretty quickly.
You are listening to 94.7 WHEVC FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. You have been listening to Straight Talk, a local program dealing with law and social justice issues produced right here in Charlottesville by our very own Ben Chambers. I'm Audrey Hakes signing off for Straight Talk. You guys have a great weekend.
This has been Straight Talk with your host, Andre Hayes, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Production is from Olivia August, engineering, Mike Friend. Be sure and listen again next Saturday morning at 10 o'clock for Straight Talk on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.